Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, and welcome to a mini-episode of Cinematic Universe, the podcast that's all about comic book movies, brought to you by FilmDivider.com. I'm your host, Joe Cunningham, and I'll be bringing you a truncated version of the show to bridge the gap between our Ant-Man and Fantastic Four episodes. On today's show, I'll give you my reactions to the comics that Seven James recommended on last week's podcast. Those were The Avengers, issues 57 through 60, and The Superior Foes of Spider-Man, Volume 1, which is issues 1 to 6. First, a couple of pieces of housekeeping. Apologies up top for the sound quality of today's episode being a little bit inferior, but I've just moved house and my microphone is still all packed up somewhere, so I'm having to use a backup today. And secondly, as announced, our next episode will be covering the new Fantastic Four film, but as of yet, we're not entirely sure when we'll be able to see it because of screening dates, so we can't announce the exact date that episode will go live yet. But know that we are going to try and strive to release it as close to the release date as possible, which is next Thursday in the UK. So, with all of that out of the way, let's now take a look at some of the comic book movie news that has broken over the past week. First up, Rachel McAdams is rumoured to be in line for the lead female role in Doctor Strange opposite Benedict Cumberbatch. There are no details on who that character might be, but I've done a bit of quick Googling. And I think that maybe it could be Clear. She could be a possibility. Or maybe they'll mix things up a bit and cast her as the villain Morgan Le Fay. I have no idea who either of those people are. But they both featured in the 1978 Doctor Strange TV movie. So they must be pretty important. And in other Doctor Strange news, Tilda Swinton has said that she doesn't yet know whether she'll be playing the Ancient One as a man or a woman. Which is kind of awesome and very Tilda Swinton-y. The writing duo of John Francis Daley and Jonathan Goldstein have been confirmed as the writers of the upcoming solo Spider-Man movie. The pair have previously written both of the Horrible Bosses movies, The Incredible Burt Wonderstone, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2, and the new Vacation movie, which they have also made their directorial debut on. I wouldn't say that I love any of those movies, really, but John Francis Daley did play Sam on Freaks and Geeks, so he'll always have a special place in my heart. A budget figure for Gambit has made its way online, and apparently the movie will cost somewhere in the $150 million range, which puts it more in line with the main X-Men movies than the cheaper R-rated Deadpool, which probably suggests that Fox have either a bit more confidence or ambition for their movie starring Channing Tatum. Netflix's Ted Sarandos has confirmed that Jessica Jones will indeed be released on the streaming platform in 2015, but Netflix have said that their plan is to release one Marvel series every 6 months or so going forwards, and that means that once all four of Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist have all launched, we will get the Defenders show, but we could see some of those characters getting multiple seasons before we get the Defenders series. So, we're still guessing that the current plan will be Jessica Jones this year, Daredevil Season 2 and Luke Cage in 2016, and then Iron Fist and the Defenders in 2017, unless a Daredevil Season 3 or Jessica Jones Season 2 or Luke Cage Season 2 is announced before then. But either way, there's lots and lots of Marvel series on Netflix to look forward to. And it seems like a lifetime ago now, but just after we recorded our Ant-Man podcast, there were a whole heap of X-Men Apocalypse images released, featuring the eponymous villain, Apocalypse, played by Oscar Isaac, Psylocke, and Storm, amongst others. There is a lot purple, That being said, out of context, Apocalypse looks terrible. Does he look terrible? I think he looks terrible. And I know you're all thinking, a couple of years ago, we all saw that first image of Quicksilver and we all thought it looked terrible. And then you all saw the movie and you thought he was great. But even if you thought Quicksilver looked great, his costume and hair were still awful. Can we agree on that? But hey, I thought Storm looked absolutely fantastic. And I'm always willing to give this kind of stuff the benefit of the doubt until we see the finished product. Because hey, it's Oscar Isaac playing a big badass X-Men villain. I can get on board with that. Oh, and slightly related, Bryan Singer has confirmed the rumours that there are plans to cross over the X-Men and the Fantastic Four. Which, obviously, but yeah, let's wait and see what that box office is next weekend. Okay, so let's move on now to discussing this week's comic book recommendations. And first up, we are going to start with James's recommendation, which was four issues of The Avengers from all the way back in 1968. These were issues 57 to 60, and they are from Roy Thomas and John Buscema. And so these four issues, the first two are more concerned with the introduction of Division. Division's first appearance, I believe, in comics, which delves into his origin as he starts off fighting the Avengers until it becomes clear that he has been created and brainwashed by Ultron. And then Vision attempts to join the Avengers. And in that issue, the Avengers decide that they're going to delve into his history a little bit more to figure out whether he's safe or not. It's a little bit like an extended version of that scene from Age of Ultron where Vision picks up the hammer and they figure out he must be okay then. They do a little bit more research in this comic because they have more time. So Vision arrives, giving a real Dr. Manhattan vibe, which again was something I saw in the movie. But the Avengers team as it exists in this comic, one of the reasons why this was recommended by James, we have Ant-Man and Wasp, except Ant-Man is Hank Pym, but not in his Ant-Man guise, in his Goliath guise, because he is getting bigger rather than smaller most of the time. I think he still can get smaller, but he tends to get bigger. He has Wasp with him, who Janet Van Dyne, who does in fact get smaller. She sticks doing that. Then we've got Hawkeye. Black Widow pops up at one point, but she's not part of the team currently. She's doing S.H.I.E.L.D. things with Nick Fury. And then there is Black Panther. And yeah, I should probably mention up front that I had a lot of fun with these four issues. I got a lot of comments last week after the Spider-Man minisode where I was quoting Stan Lee about how much fun that was. And this is not Stan Lee, although he's still the editor here, so we do get some of Stan's editorial notes. But just some of the dialogue from these from these issues are amazing. Lots of words being said that I don't think you'd accept in any other context than in a 1960s comic. Vision figures out that he's been brainwashed by Ultron and that he shouldn't be sent to fight the Avengers, that in fact he needs to defeat Ultron instead. And he goes back to find Ultron. Ultron starts delivering a bit of a villainous soliloquy to Vision, and he says, "Ultron 5 does not change his mind and has not even an artificial heart, as you do. But realizing I had created you with such great powers, I knew I could only defeat you by lowering your guard." And now this is my favorite bit. "My sole weakness is the twin electrodes which stud the side of my metallic skull, while you ran the pitiful gamut of emotions, including that of trust. And now die, fool. Die as you should have died before." Now, I'm just going to say, if I was Ultron, I probably wouldn't reveal my sole weakness being the twin electrodes which stud the side of my metallic skull. But fair play to Ultron, he does. And would you believe it, Vision later uses that against him to defeat him. "It was he who told me of the twin electrodes of his steel-strong skull. They might have withstood my attack, but not that explosion." It's really fun, and that kind of stuff was happening in all four of these issues, and I was really enjoying it. It's silly, but it's fun, and I think it's kind of what I assumed a lot of comics were before I read them, that they were just these fun, jaunty superhero stories where stuff happened and you just accepted it. And I've obviously got to know a lot more sophisticated stuff, but I guess this is just back in the days where you just want to tell a fun story, and these stories are really fun, and I was totally on board with them. I wasn't looking for any deeper subtext or anything like that. So the second issue we get Thor and Captain America and Iron Man all show up as former members of the team who I think they just turn up when important stuff needs doing. So they turn up to figure out whether Vision does belong on the team or not. And this is the issue that is titled "Even an Android Can Cry," which James has mentioned a couple of times on the podcast. And yes, Vision does cry at the end of the issue when he's admitted into the Avengers. But this was a really fun issue. I thought just for me, it was quite fun as like a little potted history of the Avengers. There's one really great page that that splashes a bunch of all of the former characters who have been on the team at this point. So this is what 58 issues in. So you've got the current ones, Goliath and Wasp and Hawkeye, and then you've got Black Widow and early versions of Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. Spider-Man is there and Hulk, and a character who I believe is called Hercules, who looks terrible. So maybe there's a reason he didn't stick around. But it was just fun for me to see what all these characters looked like 40 or 50 years ago. I think some of them wisely have undergone a redesign. Not least Black Widow, who has an interesting perm, I would say. There's some more great dialogue in this issue when they are debating whether Vision should be in the team. Ant-Man, or Goliath, looks at him and sees that he's already gone off to the side of the room and says, "Already the Vision has returned to his melancholy brooding. Can't say I blame him. What must it be like to be trapped forever in an android body, with the thoughts, the emotions of a human being? Yet why is he so? Why?" This is amazing. I don't think it's quite as fun as the jaunty Stan Lee stuff, because as I said, you can imagine Stan Lee saying them, which makes them exponentially better. And as a couple of people mentioned on Twitter, I can't wait to get some more Chris Claremont stuff, because the brief exposure I had to Chris Claremont back on our Wolverine minisode made me want to read a lot more of that Purple Prize. The comic then moves on and we get all of Vision's proper origins. And it turns out he's got the brain patterns of a former hero called Wonder Man. And obviously he was programmed by Ultron. So there's all that stuff back there. But it all culminates in that final page where you get a big page of Vision with a tear rolling down his cheek saying, "Even an android can cry." And it's really fun. But moving on to the second two issues, which I guess were more the reason why James recommended me this for the Ant-Man episode, although all of these four issues do kind of work in a nice self-contained arc. So yeah, the second two issues are concerned with the arrival of Yellowjacket. And now I'll spoil this up front for you, although it is revealed as kind of like a twist at the end of the second issue, but I kind of already knew that Yellowjacket was one of the names that Hank Pym went by. And man, this guy goes by a lot of names, because he's been Ant-Man, Giant-Man, Goliath, and Yellowjacket. He needs to pick one. But basically, something goes wrong with an experiment, and some kind of schizophrenia hits Hank, and he becomes Yellowjacket. And it doesn't seem that he seems to think that he has killed Hank Pym, and everyone hates him, except he still wants to be a part of the Avengers, even though he said he's killed Hank. And then he kidnaps Janet, and then forces a kiss on her in a very awkward, unpleasant scene. But she then kind of after that is really on board with Yellowjacket, even though he claims to have killed Hank. So everyone's like, well, why does Janet suddenly like Yellowjacket? And then she announces that she's going to be marrying him very shortly. And all of the other Avengers get really concerned with this, but they all kind of agree to honor it because they can't prove that Yellowjacket did kill Hank. Hawkeye, not least, seems to really hate Yellowjacket. Janet trusts him, and that's because she realized
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Is that he is Hank under there after when he kisses her. And so they have a wedding and lots of other characters turn up. There's one really great splash page with all of the other heroes who have turned up at their wedding. So this is the Fantastic Four there, and Doctor Strange and Nick Fury, Captain America, Iron Man, Spider-Man, the Silver Surfer, and a bunch of characters that I don't even recognize. Daredevil's at the back as well. This I think is Stan Lee editorial notes. Meanwhile, some of the world's most dynamic costume figures are engaged below in the lively and time-honored art of making small talk, which we figure you could write as well as we could. Besides, we just couldn't bear to mar this panoramic pinup page by Big John Buscema. P.S. For the teetotalers and Marveldom, rest assured that the punch our galvanising guests are drinking is strictly non-alcoholic, Charlie. Stan and Roy. So that is the page that they didn't want to put any dialogue on because they just wanted the art to stand for itself with all of that text on the top. But it is a really great page. But yeah, so there's a bit of a kerfuffle at the wedding, some villains attack, but eventually it becomes Hank's identity is revealed, and he thinks that he created the Yellow Jacket persona because secretly he didn't want to marry Janet, but he was always worried that he didn't have the time to with his work, and he created this version of himself who would have the time, and because Janet knew all along, she knew that that was just a way of her being able to marry Hank. So it all worked out well in the end. Yeah, and I actually really enjoyed this. And I think I enjoyed these... Well, no, I did. I definitely did. I enjoyed these Avengers comics more than the more modern ones, the 90s ones that James recommended me after Age of Ultron. They're a lot more silly, and I kind of guess that I forgave these comics a lot more for not having, like, a load of character debt and being able to service all of the characters and doing cool, interesting things with the team, because they were just... I don't know. I think I was willing to give them a lot more leeway than the 90s ones were. And actually, I do wonder whether they maybe did give me a bit more character insight than the 90s ones did, because those first two issues really did delve into the Vision. And yeah, I guess they kind of were like his two-part origin story. But I really did feel like I got a sense of the angst that there was for this character. And I really enjoyed all the Hawkeye bits, him being more of a smart-talking kind of badass. I think Hawkeye originally started out as a villain, which probably makes sense. Some more tantalizing glimpses of the Black Panther here. There's him. He's constantly weighing up whether he should be an Avenger or whether he should be leading his country, whether that's his rightful role. And I did want a bit more of that. And I do wonder whether maybe if I read on a bit more that I would get some Black Panther focused stuff. Who's a character I'm really interested in, not least because he's going to feature heavily in the upcoming Marvel Cinematic Universe. I would say generally over the past 2 minisodes, I'm having a lot more fun with 60s Marvel comics than I thought I was going to have. It's just story, and it is not particularly subtly told story, but it's enjoyable story, and yeah, they worked for me. Okay, let's move on now to Seb's recommendation, which was The Superior Foes of Spider-Man, issues 1 through 6. That's volume 1 from Nick Spencer and Steve Lever. And there are 17 issues of The Superior Foes of Spider-Man in total. And I think I'm going to continue and read because, first of all, I like it when there's a nice round number that I can read. I'm like, well, I can definitely get through 17 issues if I sit down and do it. I know I'm going to get to the end of this story. And I think I am going to, but I only read the first 6 this time. And as Seb kind of forewarned on the last podcast, there isn't a complete story here. There is the start of a story. So it's a little bit more difficult to review in its entirety. But I can discuss what I've read, which is something that, again, I enjoyed. This is kind of in the vein of Hawkeye, I would say, stylistically. I remember when Seb and James were recommending Hawkeye the first time around, which again I think was after our Avengers Age of Ultron episode, and saying that it's kind of defined a lot of what Marvel has done since. And I do wonder whether this is one of those. It's very tongue-in-cheek, there's lots of humour, lots of visual gag, and it felt very much like those Hawkeye issues to me. Maybe not quite sharp, or maybe not. I think maybe a little bit wordier. I think Hawkeye probably does a bit more with the artwork or storytelling with fewer words, whereas a lot of this is narrated by Boomerang, and he can talk quite a lot. Boomerang is the lead character in this, of the Sinister Six, or the Superior Foes of Spider-Man. Spider-Man does not feature, but this is taking place during the era when the Superior Spider-Man was happening, which is when Doc Ock was operating as Spider-Man instead of Peter Parker, which is something I had read, so it was nice for context, but it was basically irrelevant for the 6 issues that I read anyway, because it was just kind of that this was the Sinister Six now, and that it's happening at the same time as Superior Spider-Man. There are only 5 members of this Sinister Six, which is used to good comedic effect regularly in the book. So the leader is Boomerang. He is our, I won't say hero, and I won't say anti-hero, because he is just flat out a villain. In fact, I will read you the blurb introduction at the start of the first issue. So it says, Boomerang, Shocker, Overdrive, Speed Demon, and Beetle are not heroes. They are our 5 protagonists. They're not lovable rogues, and they're not rebels with a cause. Make no mistake, the new Sinister Six are villains, plain and simple. They're liars, cheaters, and thieves. They don't like you, they don't like each other that much. The one thing they have in common is a shared hatred for their nemesis, the Superior Spider-Man. Even if he's possessed by their old boss, Dr. Octopus, at the moment. Sometimes that mutual disdain forces them to suck it up and join forces. Together they are the Superior Foes of Spider-Man. The Boomerang, the lead character, is a guy called Fred Myers. He was a former Major League Baseball player who was caught throwing games and thrown out of the sport in disgrace, became a supervillain, and at this point has teamed up with those other 4 characters to form a 5-member Sinister Six to run some kind of heist, except the thing starts off with Boomerang in jail, and he's in jail with a Russian mobster called the Chameleon, who basically has like Mystique like powers, except he's a man and Russian and very ugly. And he's done some kind of deal with the Chameleon to help get him out of jail. And he's then going to run a heist with the Chameleon, but he's telling the rest of the members of his team that he's doing it for another villain, who is Hammerhead, except it's not really for Hammerhead at all. And it's not for the Chameleon either, because Boomerang has other plans. And the thing that he says that he's stealing, he might not actually be stealing. He might be trying to steal something else. And he's also got a parole officer who he has to work around, who is a former superhero, a supervillain himself, who was reformed. And he's taking Boomerang to Supervillains Anonymous. And it is very complex and twisty. And the heist narrative is fun. again, this so the Ant-Man recommendation, perfect. Yes, it's a heist. Yes, it's very comedic. But this, as I said, this heist is very hard to keep track of because you've got the most unreliable narrator who is unreliable from panel to panel, flat out tells you he's lying to you or just says, hey, why would you believe that? That sounds ridiculous. That can't be a real thing. But then maybe one of those ridiculous things that can't possibly be a real thing will turn out to be a real thing. And I won't spoil what they're stealing, what actually ends up getting stolen in the heist that they do. But it's very, very funny indeed. And it leads to, I think, probably my favourite two or three pages of this six issues, where Boomerang is explaining the origin of that item. And it involves an iconic Marvel supervillain, but with words being put in his mouth by Boomerang. And Boomerang's a complete arsehole. It's a really well-constructed comic in that he's charismatic enough to carry this as a lead character. You're invested in him and you follow him, but you're constantly reminded that, yes, you should not like him in any way. He's not kind of like a lovable rogue. He is just a dick. And he is screwing over everyone that he's working with at every turn. He's unpleasant to almost everyone he comes in contact with. And yet you're still really invested in each issue in what he's doing. There's a lovable haplessness to the group of them, more so for the rest of the group. So the other characters like Speed Demon and Shocker are particularly a bit kind of like lovably crap, in a way that you would expect low-level villains who are constantly getting defeated by their hero nemesis should be a little bit crap. This is obviously a knowingly rubbish version of the Sinister Six. But again, we're also constantly reminded that they're not very nice guys. One of the members of the team, Beetle, is a woman, and the way that the other characters talk to her is and look at her is particularly unpleasant. But also, she's not immune from it. She's a nasty piece of work as well. But it just so happens that Boomerang is the most nasty piece of work. And I'm looking forward to reading this more, just because from issue to issue, I'm not quite sure what the main narrative is, because suddenly a rug has been pulled, or suddenly a new plot element is being introduced, or this is changing and that's changing. And I don't know I have no idea what will be happening in this comic in an issue's time, or in 2 issues' time, or in 10 issues' time, but it's the kind of thing that I would really like to stick around and keep reading, especially as I'm reaching the end of Hawkeye. I actually went and purchased the final issue of Hawkeye in a physical copy in a comic book. I've never done that before. I went to a comic book store and bought an individual issue, which was a great new experience for me. I've got that to read, and then I'm done with Hawkeye. So this seems like the perfect replacement to ease me off that series. I'd probably be continuing reading this before I read any more Avengers, just because this is partway through a story. But I really enjoyed all of the recommendations this week. And if this is the kind of thing that Marvel does now, this kind of tone of stuff like Hawkeye and Superior vs. Spider-Man, I think I'd probably be on board with a lot more of what they're doing as well. But that is it for this week. So don't forget that the next episode of Cinematic Universe will be covering Fantastic Four, as soon as we can possibly get that to you. If you're enjoying the show, then please do subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, or your podcast app of choice. And if you've already subscribed, then please leave us a rating or review, and we'll give you a shout out on next week's show. That's happening on next week's show. So get your iTunes reviews in now, and all of the shout outs. You will get all of the shout outs. You can find more episodes of Cinematic Universe on cinematicuniverse.libsyn.com. or as we're a Film Divider podcast, at filmdivider.com. You can get in touch via Facebook, on Twitter, at @CU_podcast, or send us an email to cinematicuniversepod@gmail.com. See you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.